As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
You sum up the day.
Yeah, honestly, just felt like we got behind early. After the milk spill and the marker on the wall, we just felt like we were playing catch up the rest of the day.
Right before you went to the store, you called a timeout. Was there an attitude change after that?
Yeah, it felt like we were losing our heads there for a minute, so we wanted to just calm things down and get back to the basics.
Did you ever find your keys?
No. No idea where they are.
You gave them a snack half hour before dinner. Was that planned?
No. Lost track of time. Wasn't thinking. And so, you know, 3 bites of dinner. That's on me.
It didn't look like you had many answers to the double teams.
Is it a question?
Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Friday, June 18th. This is The Drop because it's the end of the week. I'm J.E. Skeets. Alongside me, as always, Tass Mellis.
What's up, everybody?
What's up, Tass? Got my top shot hot boy, fellow freak, Trey Kirby.
Heyo!
Hey! Yo! The international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friends.
And last, certainly not least, making the magic happen is J.D.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Smash that like button. Leave your comments below the vid. And make sure you subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube, especially if you're a new viewer here this morning. Keep sending in your questions and comments for the next Beach Step and podcast. Email them in. That's the best way to do it. NoDunks@TheAthletic.com. And finally, go grab your No Dunks merch over at NoDunks.com. I got the beautiful purple No Dunks t-shirt on right there. So you can go over to nodunks.com and grab your own. Okay, lots to talk about. We'll get to Nets Bucks and what we can expect in Game 7 on Saturday. We'll debate, I guess, the most desirable NBA head coaching job available. There's 7 as of right this second. Maybe 8 later this week. And
maybe
who knows?
Maybe 9.
Maybe 9, Lee. You're
maybe
right.
Maybe 10.
Oh, maybe 11. We've got Tweet of the Night. We've got Rapid Fire because it is The Drop. But first, breaking news this morning, and to help set it up, we turn now to the Southern Lawyer.
We got ourselves a trade.
There he is. It's been a while since we've heard from the Southern Lawyer. Yeah, we do. We got a Woj bomb here before recording the No Dunks podcast. Thank you, Woj. Thank you, Celtics. Thank you, Thunder. Thank you, NBA. Yeah, the report. The Celtics are trading Kemba Walker, their 2021 first-round pick, the 16th overall pick in this year's draft, and a future second-round pick to OKC for a package that includes Al Horford and those beautiful eyes, sweet Moses Brown, and then a 2023 second-rounder. Out of nowhere, Lili, what's your immediate reaction to this trade with Walker going to OKC and Horford going back to Boston?
Well, we heard that Kemba Walker and the Boston Celtics both wanted to part ways, and it happened fairly quickly, really. Kemba Walker was obviously a big free agent signing there. He was a good player, but those injuries really started to stack up, and he really just couldn't stay on the floor, and they still owed him potentially 2 years and $74 million, I think it was. That second year was a player option, and the Celtics clearly just decided that he didn't want to be here. We can see what we can get for him. You just call up Sam Presti and say, I'll give you a first round pick if you just take my guy. Will you do that? They get Al Horford back in Boston. And look, Al Horford's, I think, 34 now. You know, he's, I believe he's got 1 year left on his contract after this season. And he's still probably an upgrade of what they have in the middle, but I'm not sure he's going to be there long term. I'm sure there's probably more to happen to this. And the same thing with Kemba in OKC. I'd say that Sam Presti will probably hang on to him for a bit. But I think long term, he's going to try to move him somewhere else because OKC is clearly at a different stage in terms of rebuilding and restarting there. They're trying to, you know, build from the bottom up. And Kemba at this stage of his career wants to go to a contender. So there's possibly more to happen there. But yeah, you know, Kemba, it's a funny one because he was a really good player when he played on those Celtics teams. I thought he was so important to their offense. But when a guy's knee injuries start to pile up like that, he got frustrated with the team. I think the team got frustrated with him and they decided to move on. So Brad Stevens makes his first big move as a general manager here and gives up a first round pick, gets Moses Brown. You know, he showed some... I think he had big beef, didn't he?
Had a huge beef. Yeah. I think he had 19 rebounds in the first half of his big beef, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, people are saying he averaged basically 15 and 15 in the two games against the Celtics, too. So,
maybe this guy's killing us. Bring
he's
him
good.
In.
He's good. You take a flyer on him. I mean, he's playing in games that are basically meaningless. You know, now you're on a squad that has goals and wants to go far in the playoffs. We'll see what he can do in that situation. He's still likely, I guess, with Horford there, he's... the third big. I mean, he's not going to be starting on this team by any means. It's you know, Robert Williams and then Horford, I would assume, if he is still there, and then him. But, yeah, it's Kemba just getting off that task and saying, you know, save us a little bit of money. You do save money between the Kemba and Horford contracts. Horford in 2022-23, it's a partially guaranteed deal. Right. So it opens up options for them, too. What's the plan here, though, from Brad Stevens, Tass? Is it just like, we got to try and find that third star, and we've decided it's not going to be Kemba Walker to pair with... with Tatum and Brown? Like, what do you think his thinking is here?
Yeah, the Celtics won this trade for sure. They're getting off of Kemba's $73 million that he has left. He's on the wrong side of his career. That's for sure. And you'd say, well, so is Al Horford. But he's $20 million less. Mm. And they also get a prospect back in this deal in Moses Brown, who... he's 21 years old. He had a 7-block game. Sure, it could be Walter Hermann stats at the end of a year, but at least he's 7'2" and huge and a rim deterrent and has got some potential in this league. He's 21. He's young. Isn't this what OKC collects all those draft picks for? To get somebody like Moses Brown? I hate this deal for OKC. I don't see how it makes a lot of sense for them. They get the 16th pick back. Maybe you get somebody better than Moses Brown, I suppose. There's a chance. Maybe a package, all these draft picks that you have. But I guess they really have a feel of Moses Brown and they don't like him. But from what I saw, he's 7'2". He moves around the paint fairly well for a huge guy. I understand that he can't get to the three-point line all that great for a defensive player. And maybe this isn't his era. But you're taking on $73 million of Kemba Walker, who we know is not... he's just not the same Kemba Walker. To get rid of 53, not totally guaranteed, of Al Horford for the 16th pick in the draft. What are we doing here? I just don't get it.
Running here.
Isn't Sam Presti just hoping what he's done before, taking on like point guards with big contracts and sort of rehabilitate their you know, their image to the rest of the league and then flip it for more? Is that probably what he's thinking here with Kemba Walker? It's definitely not Kemba Walker is going to take us to the promised land. It's, I think, bring him in and then... he either plays well, like, you know, Schroeder there,
well?
Of course, Chris Paul
there,
and then get more, I guess, in return for them. I think that's what his thinking is. I'm with
it's
you.
It's expensive. That's an expensive gamble.
Go ahead.
It's an expensive gamble. It's just 73 mil. That's a lot of bucks that he's going to be paid over the next 2 years. So you got to handcuff yourself with the salary cap as well. I get what you're saying, but, you know, I just don't. So Al turned into... the 16th pick, but you also had to trade a pretty good prospect. And like you said, you hope he's Schroeder and he turns into something. What did they get for Schroeder? I don't even...
Jesus, off the top
Danny
of my
Green
head.
In a first-round pick. And they traded another Danny pick. Green for another first-round pick, right? Yeah. So that's what this is all going to be. Yeah. This is just going to be Kemba Walker. Maybe he plays half a season in OKC until the next trade deadline, in which case he will be traded for more picks, because that's how you win a trade on the internet these days. Trade away all your players, bring in picks, even though they're not even going to play for your team. Weird stuff, though. I don't know. I guess the Celtics win this because they're getting off the Kemba Walker deal, and there's honestly too much duplication on that roster. Your best player is Jason Tatum. He needs the ball. Your second best player is Jaylen Brown. You want him to have the ball. Marcus Smart is there. He's a guy who could have the ball. You don't necessarily need a Kemba Walker. Meanwhile, you need somebody big in the middle. Personally, I think Moses Brown is probably going to be a bit player in this league, kind of like a Boban Marjanovic, where you throw him in the perfect matchup and he can go out there and dominate for you. Probably not a long-time starting caliber big, but I think that that's Robert Williams for the Celtics, and yep. There's a lot more responsibility for him to be the guy right now. You got a little bit of a tutor there, I suppose, in Al Horford, if he sticks around for a little bit, and maybe Sweet Moses is a nice pickup, but for Kemba Walker, man, like, I just feel bad for this guy. He went from Charlotte, we're like, finally, he's going to be able to play for a contending team here. And then his coach becomes the GM and immediately ships him out. Not a great look if you're a Kemba Walker fan here. He's basically being salary dumped after his worst two seasons in the league. So, I don't know. He's got an opportunity, I guess, in OKC if they keep him around to improve his trade value coming next season because you don't need Kemba Walker. We don't need OKC to be the point guard rehabilitation stop of the league. Like, that's a very weird thing. You just go there, you have the ball in your hands a lot, you get to pass it to Shea, he makes you look good, and then you go play for another team. Odd stuff. Odd stuff from the tumbleweed capital of the NBA.
Yeah, but that's likely the conversation, you're right, that totally. Presti and Kemba Walker are going to have. Like, hey man, come in here, kill it for a couple months, you know, test that knee, get up to 20 points per, whatever it is, and then we'll flip you to the Knicks, man. We'll flip you to a big market that's going to talk themselves into, like, yeah, Kemba's back and looks good, and you know, we'll get another pick or another young prospect, and you'll go to a situation where you can maybe be playing in a playoff series and leading a team or being a second or third star on a team. Yeah, that's basically exactly how they hope it's going to go. You're right, Tass. There's a risk there in that Kemba could just be injured again and not play. Though they had Al Horford and they were like, hey, are you injured? He's like, no, I'm fine. They're like, nah, yeah, I think you shouldn't play. We might be moving you. We don't want you to get injured. So just go home, Al. Take those big, beautiful eyes and just go home. Because he didn't even play for, what was it, like 20 games? Final 21 games?
Season, pretty much. Long,
yeah.
It was something like that. So it's wild down there. We got Presti in this year's draft. The Thunder have 3 first-round picks. I think I have this right. They're going to find out where theirs falls in Tuesday's draft lottery. They have the 4th best odds. They're tied for the 4th best odds. So they're going to have a high pick. And then they've got now this 16th pick from Boston, and then they've got the 18th pick overall from the Miami Heat. So there's 3 there. Some people are saying, oh, maybe they're up to something, Tass. Maybe they're going to do a package deal and try and get an actual player in there to go with SGA and go with Dort and go with the young team they have. It's possible, but it's more likely he just drafts them all, I think.
Yeah, but it's like the Celtics were able to move up and get Jason Tatum, or move down, I should say, and get Jason Tatum for Markelle Fultz, right? Mm-hmm. So they were able to trade the 3 for the 1, essentially, with some sweetener. You know, maybe Presti's thinking the same thing. You want 4, we'll throw in a 16 that we just got. She's a beauty. And get the player that they wanted to, or whatever. I assume that is the plan. But I don't know. I also don't know how deep this draft is, as Sam Presti, I'm sure, does. Mm-hmm. It's supposedly deep, even after Cade.
Top 5 or 6, they say, is... I mean, you hear this every goddamn year.
You don't. Last year you heard it wasn't a deep draft, and it ended up being an incredibly deep draft. Yeah. So people are just making stuff up. Yeah. But I'm not super worried about the salary cap, because I don't think anybody on OKC is even past their rookie contract at this point. Like, you can afford to spend a ton of money on Kemba Walker if you're only spending money on Kemba Walker. Everybody else is bargain basement contracts, to be quite honest, and that's the way that the Thunder wanted. If Kemba Walker starts playing too well, he will pick up a mysterious injury.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yeah. Or he'll be moved very quickly. Yep. One or the other.
Hey, stop helping us win. Get out of here. We need some more picks.
Yeah, fascinating. It's amazing. It's weird to have a trade like this, Lee. Not only just before we actually recorded the podcast, but in the playoffs. Mm. You know? Just strange. Yeah, you forget sometimes that trades can happen when the other teams that are out of it you know, they can go to work. They can get on the on the phones and make a deal here. It's just I don't know. I'm sure it's happened before. I just can't remember off the top of my head over the last couple of years, like a trade like with significant names, I guess, being moved here in the middle of the playoffs in the second round. So it's a little
strange. I mean, Al Horford, obviously, he opted out of his contract there in Boston as well and signed with Philadelphia. So I wonder how he'll be received there by the Celtics fans, because I think they wouldn't appreciate him going to sign with an enemy like Philadelphia. But you know what? It's a few years ago now, and Al, everyone loves Al. No one really doesn't dislike Al. But, you know, I think he can still be the sort of guy, though, who's, you know, be a serviceable guy. You know, whether or not he maybe potentially plays backup to someone and just comes off the bench. He's 34, you know, but I think you're going to get a solid, reliable veteran out of him. He's not going to pout. He's not the sort of guy who's like, you know, if you're not playing me, I want out of here. I think he can still be a good team player. So, you know, maybe the Celtics can still get something out of him.
Yeah. I mean, if Paul Millsap can contribute here and there in Denver, I don't see why Al Horford, especially defensively, you know, he's gonna chip in. I'm with you. I don't want him to be my starting center at this point of his career. But, yeah, backup,
hey,
absolutely.
Jeff Teague was getting playoff minutes in this playoff. Somebody give Damari Carroll a phone call and see what he's up to. What do you think about this here, Skeetsy from Set B?
Sure.
If you're Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and you see your general manager keep trading guys for first-round picks, I'd be kind of shook. I've seen this a couple of times in the stream team. Mm. Should Shai Gilgeous-Alexander be worried here? Had Chris Paul alongside him, he gone. Had Al Horford alongside him, he gone. We're all kind of expecting Kemba Walker to be the next former All-Star who's there and then is not there. Is that a weird message to be sending to your so-called star?
Well, I hope they've had the conversation, I guess, SGA and the front office. I'm thinking, you know, like you don't want like a 10-year gap in your two best players, right, when you are trying to build something. So they're doing this weird thing where it's we're trying to find another star by way of the draft, of course, that we can pair with you, SGA. Like, we're trying to find you whatever, the MJ to your Pippen or the Pippen to your MJ in terms of just having like a fearsome twosome there, basically like a Jalen and Jason sort of situation. They're just trying to find that. It's weird. Yeah, it's got to be a little strange, but I don't know. SGA is so laid back. The guy's so chill. I don't think he ultimately cares right now. If he gets a second star with him that's young, that you can come up with, then I think he's going to be happy. But it's a great point by the stream team. It's happened time and time again here in a very short career for SGA, just making his way over to OKC.
Yeah, this guy's on a lot. Well, he went from the Clippers to OKC. Yeah. His OKC teams changed just like that. So, yeah, he hasn't really found solid footing yet, but he is the cornerstone there. And I don't know, he's at the worst, he looks like your number two. And like you're saying, maybe they get that number one and it's all gravy and Sam Presti's plan works out perfectly. Or maybe they draft the guy who gets injured in his very first season and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's like, we're bad again. How many times can I play for a bad team and then see the best players traded?
Yeah, and it's a good point by Set B, because we see young players taking control of their destiny a heck of a lot sooner. We see the blow up going around Luka Doncic. They're trying to please him just after 3 years of his career. We see what's the story from The Athletic about Zion Williamson. He's 2 years into his career, family around him unhappy, you know, that they're making moves like trading Drew Holiday for Eric Bledsoe, those kind of moves where they're trading for draft picks. And I get the idea with Sam Presti. Trey brings up a good point that they're only paying Kemba Walker the next couple years. They have to get to a salary floor anyways, as per the NBA rules. You can't just pay $5 for your roster. But at the same time, I guess I'm just optimistic. I guess I just want a good team there. So I'm just thinking, you know, you kind of handcuff yourself in year two of this deal. Maybe there's somebody that, you know, you're able to get via trade that's a star. Like, you know, somehow the Rockets were able to nab James Harden from you, and you want to pay a guy. But yeah, they're probably just going to draft, and Sam Presti's going to take the old trust the process route and see where we go for years on years on years.
This does not help my bet with you, though, TK, if I'm being honest. Our SGA will be an all-star within 2 years, which we made basically, I guess, two seasons ago at this point. I have one more season for SGA to reach that all-star status with our bet that we made, again, a couple of years ago. But if Kemba comes in, you know, and steals a little bit of the spotlight, steals some points from my guy SGA, that's going to hurt his chances. Though then again, maybe he helps the team win some games, and you know, you're in the mix around the All-Star break. It's going to be a fascinating watch that only you and I care about at this point.
I think we've got 1,154 people, it looks like, invested in the stream team right now. They're going to care as well come February of next season when Shai Gilgeous-Alexander will not be named an All-Star. I'm feeling good about this one, Skeets. I felt good when we made the deal, and the Thunder have just gotten worse and worse since then, despite the fact that Shai, he's an All-Star caliber player. Yeah. He could certainly make it, but I don't know if the team success is going to be there.
Yeah.
Can I ask, is the trade canceled if they change the All-Star format? Like, what if it's USA versus the world? Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's got a shot at making the All-Star team.
Mm. Ooh,
they probably won't.
Does he?
Yeah, I think so.
Is he a top 12 international player?
A guard? Yeah, I mean, top 6 guard, I think.
I would.
He's borderline.
Well, that's
top
tough.
6 guard.
That's tough.
It's not a lot of... A monstrous guard, as we discussed.
That's a good point. You get a Nikola Melli in a Rising Stars game pretty easily when you're talking.
Yeah, he's probably in because of the guards. You're right. There's just not a ton of international guards. Okay, that's what I'm praying for at this point, for Silver to change the All-Star game into an international versus Team USA. My final thought on this, Lee, I just tweeted it before we jumped on. Is this the most handsome trade in NBA history?
Mm.
Kemba Walker and that beautiful smile in exchange for Al Horford and those gorgeous eyes? Now, someone came right back at me immediately and was like, Kelly Oubre Jr. was traded for Ricky Rubio last year.
Wow.
I was like, damn.
Okay. That's a good one.
It's a good retort. God,
someone was sitting on that retort.
I know. I was like, well, we just found our next top 5 list, the most handsome trades.
I think Rubio is handsome, but I don't think he can touch Kemba and Al Horford.
I sort of agree. I agree.
Yeah.
Wow.
Al Horford, he's elite. And Kemba, Kemba's smile lights up a room. Yeah. It's got to be this one for sure.
Got to be.
Kelly Oubre, you know, if like he's got his niche, like, you know, some people really like that style. Is he handsome or stylish? I'm not sure. I would say he's more stylish than handsome.
He's both.
You think? Yeah.
Kelly Oubre easily. I think Oubre and Rubio in a blowout, personally.
Wow. This is very subjective, of course. What you consider handsome. Okay. Let's hear from everybody in the stream team. And if you could think of another one by the end of this show, by all means, you know, drop it in the stream team there. A handsome trade. It's got both players, both key players have to be, you know, above average in the handsome.
Did Wade get traded or did he sign? Has he got traded?
Jesus. Okay, let's not go down this rabbit hole. Let's let the stream team do it. We got to get to all these head coaching vacancies, and we got a game to talk about. So, you know, we had the Southern Lawyer set us up for the Kemba Horford trade. Well, let's have Zaza cue us up for this one.
Game 7!
Oh, my goodness. Good stuff, JD. Yes, the Bucks bounced back to beat the Nets last night, 104-89. And they force a Game 7, baby, Saturday night. Oh, I love it. I love a night weekend Game 7. I don't like them during the day. It ruins everything for me. But, Tass, you know, let's talk about the game and then moving ahead to Game 7, and we can make predictions and all that. But what'd you think about the Bucks? You know, pretty dominant performance. You know, at least when the Nets made runs, the Bucks always had an answer.
For sure. It's nice to hear from the Georgian lawyer, the Southern lawyer, and then the Georgian lawyer. Zaza Pachulia, lawyer from Georgia, not so much. Let's start this off by saying Reggie Miller was right. Reggie Miller hinted that Kevin Durant and James Harden should sit Game 6 because they're not going to win. Rest them for Game 7. Boom. Reggie, everyone owes you a huge apology on the internet. I say that because the home team has now won every game in the series, and it's key. Yeah, the Bucks were able to hold off the Nets, but they won the hustle points in this across the board. Mm-hmm. Offensive rebounds, second chance points, huge in the fast break category. Yeah. Both teams didn't shoot well from three. It was, it was potentially, I don't want to jinx it, but it's like one of those ugly Game 7s, but it was in a Game 6 variety. I mean, guys ended up finding their shot enough. No disrespect to Chris Middleton, I'll get to in a sec, but it was one of those games where there was some clanking going on. There was just, it didn't look like the Brooklyn Nets, you know, incredible offense that they had all season long. They're just sort of out of sorts with James Harden, but kudos to the Bucks and especially Chris Middleton. James Christian Middleton, I had to look that up because I thought, is his first name Chris? He's not a, right? Anyways, his name is James Christian Middleton. Looking back at his 38-point night, I would have thought he got going from the beginning. But he didn't hit a field goal in the first quarter at all. And if they lost this game, it would have been one of those games. Where's Chris Middleton in the first quarter? You got to put your foot down. But Chris Middleton showed up in the second quarter, and he did not stop. And he didn't even play the last 4 minutes of this game. So because it was a blowout and because there was garbage time. So 38 points, just had the flow going. They allowed a little too much space for Chris Middleton, especially with those offensive rebounds that they were getting. It seemed like Chris Middleton was stopping every little momentum run the Nets were getting. Mm-hmm. As soon as they got an offensive rebound, throw it out to Chris. He was the only one hitting threes, essentially, for this Bucks team. He was the only one who had a really good shooting night. But Giannis was doing his part and dunking. And I think the Bucks did a better job of finding some, at least a little bit of deterrence for Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant still got 30s, shot 50% in this game. But I think they did a good job of Giannis guarding James Harden. And then whenever Kevin Durant got the ball, James Harden's guy, Giannis, was ready to pop over and help out on Kevin Durant, because we know James Harden can't drive, and he played a little better, but he can't drive. So I think the Bucks, a little kudos to Bud for pushing Giannis, even though he wasn't the primary defender. He was helping out. So it was an ugly game, no doubt, but the Bucks got it done with only two bench points before crunch time. It was just somehow, some way, they got it done by hitting enough shots.
Middleton set a career playoff high with 38 points in this. 11 of 16 from the floor is mad efficient. 5 threes, 11 of 12 at the line, too. And Tass, you said it. Every time the Nets made a 10-0 run, be it KD during one third-quarter stretch there, and then there was another time early in the fourth quarter, it was always Middleton that had the answer. I mean, he would hit the bucket or he would get to the line. I loved, Lee, the two buckets late in the third quarter from Middleton, about a minute left. There was an offensive rebound from Tucker, and then Middleton just took Shamet in the post, too small, hit the turnaround jumper over him around the free throw line. Next possession, like semi-transition, he just like walked by Joe Harris. It was a brutal closeout on the side, and then he just popped and stopped a baseline jumper. That was big. And then he ended that with that little weird buzzer beater at the end there. So that was like that 6-0 Middleton run, but that was big. And one night after Paul George had what we said was his best playoff game ever, Middleton had his best playoff game ever. That's his best. You can go look it up. I mean, in terms of mad efficiency and obviously in a must-win game, he came through, and I was railing on this guy early in this series when he wasn't going to the line at all in the first two games. Two free throws combined in those two games. And now, over the last four games, this guy is shutting me up and maybe shutting up some of the Middleton haters. He's averaging 38-5 over the last four games. So he is helping Giannis out here in this series. So he was awesome last night, Middleton.
Yeah, you have to give him credit because he stunk in those first two games. I mean, everyone did for Milwaukee, but he has responded and he's answered the bell. And yeah, I mean, we thought what the key to a Bucks victory would maybe hitting the threes. Well, as sort of Tass alluded to there, they went 2 for 25 outside of Chris Middleton. They went 7 for 33 on the night. That's usually like a recipe for disaster for Milwaukee if they can't get that going. But maybe, Bud, it's taken up to the, you know, game six of the Eastern Conference semis. Maybe he's figured it out. You know what? Tight rotation, basically six players.
Yeah.
Giannis didn't take a three last night. Giannis, in fact, to me, had some Shaq-like sort of moves and scores. He bullied Jeff Green on one where he just kind of like shoved him out the way and had a little floater or sort of layup in the lane. And then he had a big dunk, like a Shaq-like dunk, where he just jammed it through the rim. And it's like, if anyone's going to try to stop this, they're going to get hurt or I'm going to get a foul as well. And that sort of aggression is what we need from Giannis. I think all of his baskets were in the paint last night, going downhill, attacking, putting pressure on that interior defense that's really lacking for the Brooklyn Nets. And it worked. So, I mean, this wasn't a LeBron game six game in Boston there. No one really is going to remember it. I mean, you know, Milton was good, but it wasn't that. It was more just kind of like they had to get it done like they did in game three, and they did, and they didn't sort of shake at any point when the Nets went on a couple of those runs. So it's a fascinating situation we're in now in game seven, because after a performance like that, you think that the key for the Bucks here in game seven, I think, is to keep doing what they're doing, attacking the paint. Obviously, if they can get the 3 pointers from Middleton and from some other guys, that'll help. But I think they can see a blueprint for how they're going to put themselves in the best possible way here to win. Kevin Durant had a quietish game after considering what we saw in game five. That was good. James Harden was obviously much better, and you expect he's going to feel better and better going into game seven. The Nets are at home, so they have certainly things in their favor. But Budenholzer, he's in the Last Chance Saloon, and maybe, just maybe, they can drag this one out and get the victory, because I think they can see a way to beating Brooklyn, but they have to be very disciplined with their offense. They can't, you know, they can't get sloppy, and defensively they just as well have to put as much pressure on Kevin Durant as possible. And again, also make James Harden work, test out that hamstring, make sure it is that he's feeling it every time down there, that he, any score he gets, he has to work hard for it. Because if they can slow down, you know, James Harden and just make Kevin Durant do all the work while scoring at the other end, that I think is the recipe for the Bucks pulling off this unlikely victory.
Coach Bud is in the Last Chance Saloon ordering his final Budweiser, TK, with possibly a tear dropping in that beer come Saturday night, but maybe not. Have they figured something out? They were sure as hell like more locked in defensively. They were switching everything. They got the home whistle, I think. That helps, of course. But yeah, can they win this game seven? Like, they can, right?
Absolutely they can win this game seven. Skeets, I know you counted them out after they won game three. I know y'all counted them out after they lost game five. I never wavered. The Bucks have been great in Milwaukee. The question will
never
be...
Never wavered. I'll have to go back and check the tape on that one. I don't know
Go back and check. And I said after game three, the Bucks have to be confident here. They got to win in an ugly game. And you're like, nah, they played terrible. The Nets played terrible and they still almost won the game, but they didn't. But that's the thing. The Bucks defense needs to travel to Brooklyn, because they've done a great job against KD in Milwaukee getting the home whistle. 30 points on 28 shots in game three for Kevin Durant, 28 on 25 shots in game four, and last night 32 points on 30 shots. If his shots are almost equal to his points, then you're going to be feeling good if you're the Bucks. But that hasn't been the case, unfortunately, playing in Brooklyn. They've been great at home, however. I gotta say, the other guy who I think is getting unfairly dumped on this series when you look at the entirety of things is Giannis. This guy has been massive the whole series. 34-11 in game one, 18-11 in the blowout in game two, an ugly one. 33-14, 34-12, 34-12, 30-17. Everybody wanted him to guard Kevin Durant after game five, but he didn't guard Kevin Durant in game six. So I don't know. I guess Giannis has been fine here. He just is bad at shooting free throws and everybody's looking forward to him failing. I thought him guarding Harden was huge. It just kind of took the Nets out of their flow there, and the Bucks made it really hard on Kevin Durant to get the shots that he was getting easily and knocking them down in game five. So yeah, the Bucks can easily win game seven here. We've been talking about are they ever going to hit 23 pointers? Maybe. Maybe the Nets do it, though, in game seven. That's the thing. It's a total coin flip at this point, and that's why the Nets have to be kicking themselves for not winning that game three.
Yeah. I mean, I guess both teams are upset that they somehow haven't won these series already. You're right. Nets game three, and then the Bucks multiple times where it looked like they could have actually won this series already. But we got a game seven. That's what everybody wants. I wish I had time. The Kemba-Horford trade threw me for a loop this morning, because I was actually planning to sit down and like look at the last couple of Game 7s in the postseason, like over the last couple of years, and like, were they close games? Because, you know, sometimes like Game 7s can like be overtimes in an NBA game where you're like, awesome, here we go, extra period, and that's like, ugh, turns into a dud. Like, one team just runs away with it in an overtime period or Game 7s. But I feel like over the last couple, we've had some like close game sevens. And again, I meant to like go and really check it. So maybe the stream team can help me out there. Hopefully,
Mavs Clippers.
Yeah, Clippers kind of close. Pulled away from them late, but it was a few minutes.
But we've had some like, I know there was a good couple years there where it was like some game seven duds where it was like just these massive blowouts. But I think you guys are right. Over the last couple years, we've had some close ones. And I think that favors the Nets, does it not? If it is a close game at home with Kevin Durant, probably. You're gonna likely bet on them in a close situation, but yeah, who knows? It's crazy that that we even have a game seven in this series. It should have been over a couple times, probably, like I said, on both sides. But here we are, and I'm excited Saturday night. Lily, you got a prediction for it?
Well, again, backing against Kevin Durant at home is tough, so I am going to take the Nets, and because the Bucks, haven't been very impressive at times in Brooklyn, so I think a home team deserves to be favorite. Kyrie Irving, not sure what his status is, but yeah, tough to back against the Kevin Durant game seven. So I'll take the Nets in a close one, though. I don't think this one's going to be a blowout. I think this one's going to come down to the wire.
Tass, what's your prediction? And let's take it to the next level. Who would be an unlikely hero in a potential Game 7? We know KD is going to get his, and Giannis is going to do his thing. It's 30-15. You just bank that. But who could be like an unsung hero here?
Well, yeah, I'm locking in on the Nets. I think they get it done. The thing for the Bucks is, yeah, Giannis has been steady. The reason they went and got Drew Holiday is because they know that Chris Middleton isn't a rock solid all star in the postseason. So we saw his 38 point game here in Game 6. Can he come close to that in Game 7? And if not, it's got to be Drew Holiday. And he still has not had a good game, even though he got up there to 21 points in this game, is on an 8 of 21 shooting. He still just doesn't have it. He has the ability to get his shot whenever he wants. And that is definitely why he's got a max contract there. And he also has more opportunity now that Budenholzer has shortened the rotation mm-hmm. there. They're waiting for it. We're all waiting for it. Giannis has done a really good job, but he is not a closer. If Chris isn't going to be a 38-point guy, which how can you expect him to do that? You got to expect Drew Holiday to do that. If you're the Milwaukee Bucks, it's what you paid him for. But I expect the Nets to come out and win. And whether James Harden is better or not, yeah, the Giannis move on him, definitely a better move because Giannis is a great help defender. That's why he doesn't take Kevin Durant. You don't want Kevin Durant dancing on him, but James Harden ain't moving out there, so he helps out on Kevin Durant. The guy who can get free, though, is Joe Harris. When is he going to go off? I'll expect Joe Harris to go off at home somehow. Still hoping. It's if you're a Nets fan, you're hoping for Joe Harris to find his flow. If you're a Bucks fan, you're hoping for Drew Holiday just to be that sort of third guy to help out. But good sign for the Nets that James Harden got better. I don't know how you get healthier playing on an injured hamstring. I don't, but he is. Somehow he got better from Game 5 to Game 6. So is he going to be better Saturday night? Exciting stuff, Skeets. I'm with you. Nice Saturday night. ABC. No 3 o'clock afternoon.
No,
you know?
Get out of here. We got pools to splash around in during the day in the hot heat here in Atlanta. The night game, perfect. I love it. And that's after tonight's games too. Some of you guys going down to the Fortress for a game 6.
Pretty penny to be standing around.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
You priced out the hardcores, Hawks fans. I'm sure they'll be packed. They could have had a few more diehards in the standing room only.
Yeah. There's lots of room in those concourses. Pack them in there, Atlanta. Lots of standing room. Trey, you want to make a prediction? I know it's very difficult, but the same two questions that I just threw at Taos. Who do you got winning this thing on Saturday night? And like, who could be, or what's the key, I guess, to watch in this game?
Nets in 7 for me was the pick, and it's still going to be the pick because when it comes down to it, they do have Kevin Durant. There have been multiple times in this series in Milwaukee where it felt like Kevin Durant was coming for the Bucks and he was going to take over, and that was going to be the game. Kind of felt like that last night, but Giannis, he doesn't get the credit as a closer despite the fact he scored 7 during a huge 14-0 run, had that big dunk with about 6 minutes left, and that ended the game. Unfortunately for Giannis, I feel like a lot of the times when he's the closer, it's just kind of burying a team and putting them down by 20. You're like, okay, that's the game, but it's not the same in the clutch. The Nets have been much better, obviously, at home. For a random guy who's going to get hot, how about Landry Shamet? Somebody's got to make some three-pointers in this Game 7. I think he's made 6 through the first 6 games. Give me 6 in Game 7.
I wonder if this is going to be a low-scoring Game 7 affair. It's got that vibe to it, which doesn't mean it'll be an ugly game, because those are sometimes very entertaining. But, I hope it's close down the stretch. I guess I got to stick with my Bucks here. If they win Game 7, I win $100 from TAS. So, I'm really locked in on this Game 7. I'll flip that money around, guy. Oh, no, that doesn't make sense. I was going to say I could help you guys out get those tickets for Game 6 and the Hawks, but unless you want to fly potentially to Philly for a Game 7, we'll talk about it offline. Very excited. Let's take our first break, and then we'll get to ranking these available head coaching positions.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers? That's a butterfly effect for
real. This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, with this week's news that Rick Carlisle has stepped down as head coach of the Dallas Mavericks and reports that neither Scott Brooks with the Wizards or Stan Van Gundy with the Pelicans will return as his team's head coach, we are now suddenly up to seven teams searching for sideline replacements. Could be eight after Saturday night with Coach Bud. Like you guys said, could be nine, could be 10, could be 11. Those seven head coaching vacancies right now in alphabetical order are the Blazers, the Celtics, the Magic, the Mavericks, the Pacers, the Pelicans, and the Wizards. So the question is, Lee, what's the most attractive NBA coaching job available? And we thought it'd be fun if you counted them down from, you know, least desirable head coaching job to the most desirable head coaching job. I know you sometimes struggle when it comes to the countdowns. Are we going up and down? I want you to count backwards.
7 to 1,
Lee,
1 to 7.
7 to 1. Least desirable to most desirable. What do you got?
Okay.
Nick?
Well, I've got quite a bit actually. So sit back and relax. Okay. The most important factor for me in becoming a successful coach is the talent you have. You know, Steve Kerr and Steve Nash are very smart. Their first jobs were on stack teams. We know how it went for Steve Kerr, and Steve Nash is in a good spot to do something similar. And I think we are likely to see, very likely to see, a female coach for the first time, given so many openings. And I think there's a team wants to be that sort of historical team to name a female coach. There's plenty of qualified candidates. So I think it is going to happen. But I think it's very crucial that whoever that is on a team that has a legit chance to at least make the playoffs. Because if a female is to join a team that's in rebuild mode, it can so easily go badly and it'll be like, well, see, women can't coach. I think that's almost like going to just be a given. And it's very tough even on a rebuilding team. Owners, GMs, fans, everyone's impatient. Nobody wants to hear, hey, we're like going to be good in 3 years' time, 4 years' time. Right. So you haven't got, even if it is your first time, even if it's an owner who says, listen, we're signing you a four-year contract, doesn't always mean anything really. So anyway, I took into account what I believe is short-term success and long-term success. I looked at cap space, draft picks, and historical free agency appeal.
Wow, look at this guy doing his homework there on a Thursday. No happy hour. This guy had all the time in the world.
For cap space, I used Basketball Reference. And for lottery odds, I used Tankathon, okay? So I know some of these things sort of vary a little bit, right?
Stating his material, all right.
Well, I just,
are you campaigning for one of these jobs right now?
You know what?
Get in the Mavericks front office. I know you got the shorts, buddy. Give me a call. Look at all these sites I can navigate.
I'm not saying yes, but I'm also not saying no. So, yeah. But anyway, just in case someone is saying, oh, you know, on this side it has this or this or that. These are the two that I used, okay? So I'm going with number seven first. It's the Orlando Magic. Here are the pros.
Okay.
Fairly clean cap sheet right now. No grotesque contracts on there. Some intriguing talent. Wendell Carter, RJ Hampton, Cole Anthony, I think, actually was quite good for them. But no absolutely must keeps. I think anyone could be had on that roster right now. They have two first rounders coming in from the Bulls, one this season and one in 23, protected, but still, you know, potentially I think as high as four for one of those. And another one from the Nuggets coming in 2025. So there's some draft capital there. They have a 14% chance at the number one pick this season. And they've had the number one pick three times in the past and have gotten it right pretty much every time. Chris Webber, Shaq, and Dwight Howard. They've committed right now to around $100 million for next season. So in theory, they have enough to make a decent free agent signing, maybe not a max there. Okay, so that's the pros, cons.
Yeah.
Highest paid player for next season is Gary Harris. Then it's Jonathan Isaac at 17. Gary Harris at 20 million. Then Jonathan Isaac at 17, and Markel Fultz at 16 million. And Isaac is also their longest commitment, 4 years, $70 million deal starting next season. There's just no real star on that roster. There's no one there that you're like, great, this guy is definitely going to make the franchise move. No one like that. Not a free agency destination either. Their biggest names have been Tracy McGrady and Grant Hill 20 years ago. Almost got Tim Duncan, but they didn't. After that, you've got a Rashard Lewis and maybe a Turkaloo. So, you know, Orlando's not really on the radar, I would say, for that. So whoever takes over, you've got a ton of work to do from the start. A team made the playoffs the last couple of years, but or they didn't this season, but, you know, prior to that, winning a couple of games, but not really.
But you
really
have low expectations, at least, with an Orlando Magic job.
Yeah, you do. But again, as I was saying before, fans have been, like, waiting since the Dwight Howard trade for something to change.
Yeah.
And it hasn't.
Yeah.
So they're saying, you're coming in saying, can you be patient for another 3 years? Like, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's a hot spot.
Okay.
Number six, Indiana Pacers, the pros. Already some real talent there. Sabonis, LeVert, Miles Turner, Brogdon, all of these guys under contract too for at least two more seasons and have been together for a couple of seasons, except for LeVert, of course, already. I think there's an identity, a familiarity with that team. No one has an awful contract, so they can move someone. Sabonis is obviously an all-star, all-NBA caliber player. They don't have room for a max contract right now, but that's okay because of the players they've got there. They've got a few second-round picks coming in the next few years, but nothing major. I think they're a better team than their season ended as well. I think there was some chaos there with Yorker.
They were injured left and right.
They were injured. So I think they are actually better than what we saw from them. The cons. Look, they're a good, solid team. They work both hard at both ends. The problem is they're not great at one thing and they're not terrible at another. They're not a legit contender right now, I don't think. Last season they finished 14th in offense, 14th in defense. You know,
nice.
They basically gave up exactly what they scored.
Yeah.
You know? They're good. They're just not that special. According to Tankathon, they have a 1% chance of getting the number one pick.
So you're telling me there's a chance? Wow.
There's a chance. And also, they signed Malcolm Brogdon when they got him away from the Bucks. But other than that, not a huge free agent destination either. So that's counting against them there. But again, not a terrible position. Should make the playoffs. So it's okay.
Okay.
Yeah, Washington. I actually think that that's a good spot to go if you want to be named coach of the year.
Totally.
Because I'm thinking the Pacers have a major bounce back season. I think Sabonis played the most games of anybody on their team this year, and he missed 10 games as their best player. Basically, their entire starting lineup was out at some point during the season. So as long as you come in, you're a chill bro and you don't piss off everybody in the locker room, you're almost guaranteed to have a better year as long as, you know, injuries are sort of a normal level for the Pacers next year.
Yeah, I'm high on this Pacers job too in terms of it being desirable. I know Nate Bjorkgren is the weird exception, but it feels like you're allowed a couple years there to get your footing. You know, you already have a good team, like you said, Lee. You know, you're pretty established, that squad, if they don't decide to move off of a Sabonis or a Turner, which they could. I like that job. I like that job just in terms of, like, stability, a coach of the year possibility, you know, where you're up suddenly to the fourth or third seed maybe if it all goes right. But I get it. I mean, there's a bunch of other good teams. That's the weird thing with all these vacancies,
yeah.
Lee. Is it like, I mean, it's outside of the Magic. These are all, like, playoff teams for the most part or in play in tournaments and stuff like that. All these other jobs. That's the crazy part. These aren't a bunch of crappy teams. They're a bunch of average to above average teams. So it's a little weird. Yeah.
Well, yeah. See, that's what happens with the Washington Wizards coming in here at number five. The pros, look, the pros, not many, to be honest, because they've got two really good players for now. But I'm not convinced they will or should keep Beal and Westbrook for next season because, look, they both have one guaranteed year on their deals, and then they have a player option for combined around $84 million the following seasons. This season's incredible rally at the end was fun. It was impressive. It was awesome watching Westbrook break the triple-double record. But in reality, it was nothing more than lipstick on a pig. You know, they weren't close to contending. You know, they weren't really like, maybe they can make some crazy run here like the We Believe Warriors. It wasn't really that. It was more just like, wow, they looked like they were trash. They kind of got it together. But I don't think long-term this is going to be the team. I think Beal, he's gone whether or not he asked for it or not because I think it's like time to move on. Now, look, Achimura, I think he looks okay. Thomas Bryant, when he was playing, he was going okay as well. But again, no one there that you're like, man, this is the guy I can shape and mold into like a superstar. The cons, they can't get the number one pick. They've got Bertans' contract still. Not a free agent destination. No cap space anyway. This is the other problem with Beal and Westbrook on your books taking up so much of your money right now. They can't actually go out and entice a free agent to come and make a veteran free agent to surround those guys because they're taking up too much of their money. They also sent a heavily protected first rounder to Houston in that deal for Westbrook. So they've lost that. They've got a few second rounders coming and going, but nothing significant. So I sort of think that if you're going to Washington, it's like, is this team, how is this team going to look next season and even halfway through next season if they get off to a bad start? Westbrook's into his 30s, we know that. You know, some injury concerns. And Beal, I just sort of feel that we're at that point. Again, Beal's playing good soldier. He's saying he doesn't want to trade. He's not going to move ask to go out of Washington. But I think it's just a matter of time before that happens. So if you were to take that job today, I think the team and roster could look really different this time next year or even halfway through next season. So some uncertainty.
That's why I would have Indy above Washington personally.
Yeah, you're probably
right.
Because
that would
be my
concern. It could be a James Harden-like situation in Houston where a new coach comes in and suddenly it's like, uh-oh, your star player is like, bye, I want out of here. And it's like, oh, God. Now what do we have? Yeah, that could happen. You could see it happening.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, look, I was probably a bit harsh on Indiana already looking at that. But anyway, we move on.
Mm.
Portland. Now, the reason I got the Blazers here is because they've already got a legit candidate, MVP candidate, and the all-star talent in CJ. Established star in Lillard. You know he's going to perform to a certain level, bring them to a certain level. But it's almost a bit like the Washington situation as well. I think there's change coming. I'm not sure what it is. Likely to be CJ before Lillard, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Lillard does move on at some point as well. It's not that he's going to come out and say it, but I think the Blazers kind of like, we've gone as far as we can with these two guys here. Now, the cons, you know, Lillard has shown and stated his loyalty, but I just don't think he and CJ are there for too much longer. I think they just have to move on because as good as they've been, making the playoffs, you know, Lillard's been great in those playoffs. They're not a legit title contender right now. They need a change, you know. And similar with the Wizards, with Lillard and CJ's contracts, taking up so much cap space, they just can't go out there and get that big name, that third big name that could maybe take them to that next level. Norm Powell, likely to get a decent extension this summer. I think he probably stays in Portland, maybe not, but Norm Powell is not that big wheel that they really need there. Their first round pick also goes to Houston this season from the Covington deal last season. So
everybody's first round pick goes to Houston, it sounds like.
Exactly, exactly.
And the Rockets and the Suns also have your first round pick.
Steven Silas got in early there.
If the Sixers were to lose tonight here down at the Fortress with you guys maybe in attendance, are we going to see a McCollum for Simmons type of trade Tass, or a Beal for Simmons type of trade? Is that going to come right back into the news cycle? And is there any possibility that a trade like that could help both teams? In regards to the Sixers getting a scorer, an actual guard, perimeter player that can score and get a bucket late to pair with Embiid, and a defensive-minded guy like Simmons pairing with if I look at Portland, with a Lillard.
Have you taken this to the trade machine?
Well, I mean, I haven't.
It's got some prospects.
There's something
it's
there.
It's got some prospects.
It feels like a trade that could help both teams that would need to, they need to do a little bit of a shakeup. They got to switch up what they're doing. So,
absolutely. Yeah, that's a good one. The Blazers, high on the priority list, defense.
Yes.
But high, but they got to make it an even higher priority than last year because they tried last year with Robert Covington and Derek Jones Jr. Now, I think Yusuf Nurkic is going to be the first domino to fall to be a little bit more of a quick defensive team. That's probably the most important thing. You know, you can pick off Ben, you can pick off guards and get into the middle and they're slow. But I see what you're saying. But I mean, the Sixers most definitely, they have to. Daryl has to make a big move like that. I think I'm calling Daryl Morey by just his first name. I think I think it's Ben over Tobias, even though Tobias would be probably his first pick to move, but much
you're
going to
get
contract.
More in return for Ben Simmons, I would think at this point. Ooh, yeah. Okay, Lee, love it. Keep it going.
Okay, number
three,
I think we're up to. Yeah. Okay, the Boston Celtics. Now, look, two young stars locked up long term. The Celtics, there's no way they're moving Jason Tatum. I think it's incredibly unlikely they move Jaylen Brown. There's been some whispers about that. I don't think that's going to happen. Now, this sort of changed a little bit this morning because I said their periphery pieces, like Kemba Walker, he doesn't want to be there, is up for grabs. We know that has now happened. So he is, he's gone. And as far as draft picks, that they don't have any problems there as far as losing their first. So they, of course, they gave up their 16th pick for this deal. Mm-hmm. But other than that, that's not, you know, the 16th pick is fine. You can live with that. The cons for the Celtics, now it might change a little bit because I said they had no real cap space for next season. That probably doesn't change. Actually, Horford's contract was probably not too far off Kemba's.
About 10
yeah,
less.
They got some wiggle room.
Save
yeah.
some okay, bucks.
Okay, so they did make a little bit of room there. You know, so listen, overall, it comes back to my sort of first point, the talent. You've got two who are all-stars this year. Should have been, Tatum should have been an all-NBA player as well. I think Jaylen Brown at his best could also sort of find his way onto that. I think Brown could be an all-defensive player. So when you've got two young stars like that, I think that's an attractive position to be in because that's what you want. That's ultimately what it comes down to. There's no question about the ability and the talent those guys have. It's just now surrounding those pieces. I think Marcus Smart could be had for something as well. I like him, but it's one of those things. It's like maybe it's just trying to mix things up a little bit. So I think the Boston job is pretty attractive. Number two, I'm going with the Pelicans, and there's a lot of reasons for this one. You know, a legit franchise-altering star entering his third season. He's young enough to be coached and molded. This is where he sort of varies a bit from a Damian Lillard, who, not that Damian Lillard's uncoachable by any means, but it's just harder to coach a guy later in his career who's so well-established. Zion isn't that just yet. You know, some concerns about his long-term future. We saw, a report coming out of New Orleans this week. But the thing is, New Orleans still owns his contract for the next three seasons, no matter what happens. So there's time here to get it right. They're not going to trade him. They're not going to say, okay, it's time to blow up the deal and trade him for stuff we can get now. They're going to have Zion Williamson for three more seasons. You know, Brandon Ingram, he's been fantastic in his couple of seasons in New Orleans. And I think someone like Jackson Hayes has potential. I think Alexander Walker has potential. So there's some talent there. But this is also where it really helps. They've got so many first-round picks and swaps coming in the next few years from the Lakers and the Bucks. I believe it's four outright firsts and three first-round pick swaps with those two teams. They also have a ton of cap space for next season because Zion's still under his rookie contract. Ingram's, he signed a long-term deal, and maybe they do get Lonzo Ball back, but they've got enough room there to move around. So David Griffin has got a ton to work with here. He's just got to get it right, and he has still got a little bit of time on his side. You know, he knows, obviously, Zion will be entering his third season with his third different coach, which is not ideal, but that's okay. You've still got a little bit of time on your side. So the cons, a little bit chaotic, which is never a good sign. You know, it is. It is.
Yeah. You know, these drama. Reports were not good coming out
And as I've mentioned
where
already.
Zion's family's not happy, basically, with where the direction of this team is going. So, hey, yeah. Get out of here, Stan Van Gundy. Which, these young guys, these generational superstars, they have so much power that if he or his team or his family say, we don't like this coach, I mean, they're almost held over a barrel. They're like, okay, then we got to get rid of them, right? Similar mm-hmm. to what, of course, maybe is happening in Dallas with Luka saying, I don't like this particular person in the front office or whatever. It's like they have to bend to the whims of these stars. You almost have to.
Yeah.
Or they're going to be like, well, I don't want to play here. I don't care what my contract says. I don't care what max contract I sign. I'm not going to be happy. I'm going to make life hell for everybody, and we're going to be in the news nonstop. So you'll just have to trade me. So, anyway, sorry to interrupt.
But as I say, time is still on David Griffin's side for now. I think he's still got a little bit of time here to get things right. You know, again, through these draft picks, maybe through free agency, and if he nails the next coach and someone really unlocks Zion and Zion's, you know, vaulted into the MVP conversation next year, and the Pelicans start winning, things can change very quickly. Mm-hmm. So that's why I have him there, because I think you would love to coach him. But the number one spot is Doncic in the Mavericks, because he's the best talent out there. He's young. He's already said as well, he signaled that he's going to sign that rookie max extension despite what we've seen happen this week. You know, Luka Doncic is an MVP candidate. We know what he can do in the playoffs. You can see how good he is. I think if you're a coach and you could pick, you'd say, I want the best player I can coach. And I think he is the best player out there. So on paper, the Mavericks have an enticing roster. Porzingis is obviously the biggest sort of question mark. Is he good? Is he not good? He's had his issues, but maybe after a full summer of working out a preseason, you know, working on so many of those things, if he can live up to his potential, then I think you're in a really good spot there, because he's a young player as well. So there's plenty of room here for these two to grow. It's not time just yet to sort of sever the cord and move on from him, but it may be if Porzingis comes in fresh and healthy next season and he still can't quite perform to the level of an all-star, which we expect him to be. So listen, I think Mark Cuban, he's going to do whatever he can. He realizes the situation, and now there's a somewhat urgency there to get Lucas and talent. Now, Mark Cuban, he hasn't gone into the tax for a long time, about a decade. According to my last count from Spotrac, he went into the luxury tax about $150 million like for about 9 years. So he has done it, but he just hasn't done it since they won the championship. Maybe it's time for him to have to do something like that. He's got the money. We know he's got the big bucks, so he can do it. The cons. Look, they need, I think, a big-name free agent this summer. I think they're probably going to re-sign Tim Hardaway Jr. You know, they have the cap space for it. He sort of has earned that money because they owe, in this Porzingis deal, they still owe the Knicks their first-round pick this year and 2023. So, you know, they're not going to be able to sort of get that high pick in the draft this season. And Mark Cuban just doesn't really like the draft anyway. He prefers free agents. So that
he just says, hey, Bob Lugaris, just pick whoever you want.
Exactly. Yeah. So look, the reason ultimately,
yes, pick an Australian. It doesn't matter.
Ultimately, the reason I go with Luka is I think his star power overrides everything because I think he's the best player out there to be coached. You can argue Lillard's, you know, better, sure, but I just sort of feel there's a little bit more uncertainty there in that Portland future. And I just feel like, say, with Luka saying already, I'm signing the rookie max extension. So there's not that, you're not going into a situation where it's like he's in that lame duck season where it's like, maybe I don't sign it. They could obviously sign him to the qualifying offer anyway, and he would only be a restricted free agency following that fourth season. But the fact that he's basically said, just give it to me, I'm going to sign it, I don't care, is a good sign. So for me, the Mavericks is the most enticing job out there.
Yeah, see, this is interesting. You're going with Luka in Dallas and then Zion in New Orleans as like the star players, the young players you'd want to build around. But you're also picking the two franchises that have the most turmoil, I think we could say, in their front offices and with what's going on with the organization. So it's like, on one hand, yeah, you're right. And you broke it down. You said, no, if I'm a coach, I want to pair myself with talent, and like you're picking basically like the best young guys, you know, Lillard as the exception there, maybe the best player still of the bunch, but a little bit older. But man, you're going into some choppy waters, Tass. It potentially
under pressure.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, both situations for sure. I get where Lee's coming from. I want Lee's ranking of the seven franchises where he'd like to work. Would you rank Dallas as number one of all those?
Like pure cities? Just the cities?
Well, no, it's going to be situational. Oh. Like the team. You got to work for the team, you know? Yeah. I don't know. You like Trajan Langdon in New Orleans. You'll probably be working under him a lot.
Lee's got, Lee knows you like David somebody Griffin. With the Dallas Mavericks. He's already got an in, I feel like, with the Mavs. Don't you?
Yeah, I would. But you know what? I want to live in California. Yeah. I'm going to the Warriors.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd like to live in San Francisco.
That's a smart call.
Yeah. Off the board. Nice.
Trey, great job, Lee. That was awesome. Love you breaking that down. You counted down perfectly, too, from 7-1.
Did I? I don't know.
Always well done with you. But the pros and cons, fantastic. Trey, what did you make of his list? Is there one that he had in a weird spot to you? What do you think about the most desirable Mavericks at the number one spot for him? What do you think of his list?
Well, Skeets, like we said, I've got Pacers over Wizards, but I'm not spending any more minutes talking about those teams with regards to this. But at the top of the list, I agree with Lee, despite the turmoil going on in the front office and the kind of uncharted territory that the Mavericks are going to be going into here with questions at the top of the organization, which hasn't been the case in over a decade, I still think he's the guy. Because you've got an MVP candidate in Luka and already an established playoff team in the Mavericks. Now it's just figuring out how to be the best version of the Mavericks that you can be. And theoretically, if you're a coach, that's your dream, right? Saying, I got an MVP I can build my team around. That does sound enticing. And I think you're taking the Mavericks over the Blazers because the Mavericks are earlier in their team building process right here, whereas the Blazers, it feels like it's starting to fall apart and you could be losing the star, where at least with the Mavericks, you've got the star. Also, you're taking the Mavericks over the Pelicans because the Mavericks are a little bit farther on in their build. So I'm actually with Lee. I would maybe bump the Blazers up to number two, but I think the Mavs is number one.
Just to circle back to what you said off the top there, Lee, and I know you've got a fantastic breaking t-shirt on as well, Bet on Women. I saw a bet going around that the odds on a woman being named a head coach, like for this offseason to the start of next season, let's say game one, it's like +200 no. Or excuse me, +200 yes, actually. It was more, the odds are in favor of there not being a female head coach by the start of next season with all these openings, with all these names like Lawson and Weatherspoon and Becky Hammon and, you know,
Staley,
even more.
Staley,
exactly.
Yeah.
So I thought that was That was fascinating. I was looking long and hard at that one. That plus 200 for yes, there will be a female head coach named by the start of next season. Wait, so do you think there will be, if you were a betting
man? I think there will.
Yeah.
I think there will be one. I actually think Dave Griffin might be the first one there to do it, because Witherspoon has been in the front office for a while. There's a female owner there. Her name has escaped me right now.
Gail Benson?
That's the one, Gail Benson, yeah. So, and again, I don't think it's tokenism. I don't think David Griffin's like, I just want to be the guy who hired a female coach. I think, you know, he believes that Witherspoon could coach that team.
And, Zion has a great relationship, apparently, with her.
Exactly. Too. He's worked closely with her. And so, you know, Becky Hammon is probably the favorite, given that she's been with the Spurs as an assistant for so long. But... who knows? Who knows if one of those other teams will take it, the plunge? But I think it's, you know, Greg Popovich says it, basketball is basketball. And that's the thing about it, is if you are a smart person, you understand how to coach and communicate, man or woman doesn't really matter, as long as you're out there getting the results. So I just, like I did say
so
off the top.
So let's bet our houses on it, man. Let's do it.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is like us at the roulette table. We'll just throw it all down, you know? Plus 200.
Yeah, no, so I think, especially when we have so many openings as well, you know, and the other openings, look, technically, the Atlanta Hawks job is open. I think Nate McMillan's going to get that no matter what.
Yeah.
One question, Quinn Snyder, if they lose tonight, I think he's been there 7 seasons.
Yeah, I don't think he's going anywhere.
I mean, look at the Jazz in the playoffs.
Oh, they have a pretty good built-in excuse, especially if Conley and Mitchell don't play tonight. They're like,
what about last season? What about the season before against the Rockets? They went out.
Kawhi's out too. I mean, if the Clippers are missing their best player, you can see it.
I think he'll be there. I don't know what his contract situation is. I don't know if he's like up. I don't know if his salary or sorry, his his deal is up or what that. But I think
I think he's a good coach. But I think if they blow this from a 2-0 lead, especially with Kawhi out.
Fairly new owner as well, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Think Dwayne Wade's going to coach? There you go.
Qualtrics
slips right in there.
Maybe they'll just have the Qualtrics app or website coach the team. Just do it. They did it. They were doing it in Dallas with Bob Vulgaris coaching it with
AI
happening and all the lineup information. I think Milwaukee probably jumps to the number one spot of this list when all said and done. I mean, Dallas is. Definitely attractive, but at the same time, if you're a coach looking at that spot and you hear all this stuff about people in the front office dictating your lineups, telling you how things should be played on the floor, I think there's some hesitancy, but Luka probably overrides that. But I think Milwaukee's going to sneak in at the number one spot, because I think we're sitting here at the end of the bubble saying Bud's job is on the line after they got bounced to the Heat. They gave him one more chance, but I don't see it going past game 7 if they lose. I just don't see that. But I don't know. Then just go watch Teresa Witherspoon's inspirational segment if you're looking for a little inspiration this weekend. Pelicans assistant head coach. She's the best. She's awesome. She's really, really good. Hopefully we are betting on women. The very least 1, 2, 3. There should be options for next season. I mean, what are we waiting for here? Let's just do it.
Other news: Hornets Rookie of the Year LaMelo Ball and Wolves guard Anthony Edwards were unanimously selected to the NBA All Rookie First Team on Thursday. Both rooks received votes on all 99 ballots from a global panel of sports writers and broadcasters. Why is this one out of 99? They're usually out of 100. What happened to this one person? They forgot to submit this. Joining Ball and Edwards on the all-rookie first team, Kings guard Tyrese Halliburton, Pistons forward Sadiq Bey, and Rockets forward Jayshon Tate. All-rookie second team, Knicks guard Emmanuel Quickley, Grizzlies guard Desmond Bane, Pistons center Big Beef Isaiah Stewart, Cavs guard forward Isaiah Okoro, and Bulls forward Patrick Williams. Yes, the florist sneaks in there with a last second delivery, just getting in there to the all rookie second team. We can make this pretty quick, Trey. I always forget that they name an all rookie second team. It's just sort of funny when you think about it, but you got to show some love to the kids. Any surprises though, Trey, or if you want, biggest snub when it comes to this?
Oh, let's talk snubs. I think this is pretty solid though. The top three rookies are on the first team.
Yep.
LaMelo, Ant Edwards, and Tyrese Halliburton. I also think Sadiq Bey, probably the number four rookie during this class. Number five though, you kind of take your choice. Jayshon Tate, a solid choice. Could have been Bane, could have been Stewart, could have been Quickley, but Got the top four right and one of the number five, so all good by me. You know I love seeing the Flores there on the second team spot, but if you're talking snubs, got to start with Cole Anthony, who last night tweeted, "I ain't even going to lie, y'all are mad disrespectful," with three laughing faces, and then he pinned the tweet. I love to see that, really sticking to his guns, pinning the tweet to his profile. He finished fourth in scoring, seventh in rebounds, fourth in assists. Pretty solid counting stats for a rookie. Hit two buzzer-beating game winners, which could maybe be a record for a rookie. At the very least, though, it's a solid case for him. But he only played 47 games, so I'm sure that that's the argument against Cole Anthony. But he would be my number one snub, I suppose.
That's fair. Tass, any other snubs? You agree with the Cole Anthony? You're upset about it. What do you think?
Yeah, there's a lot of snubs out there, actually. Surprising when we talked about this draft class before going into it. No one really knowing who the number one pick was. After reading the replies to Sham Sharania's announcement of this on Twitter, I realized, oh yeah, there's a lot of good rookies. I'll just fly through some of these replies here. Malachi Flynn, snub. Where the f*** is Precious Achiuwa? Poku?
I mean,
Poku? Yeah. Poku? Yeah, it's just fun to say that. LMFAO, Desmond Bane over Cole Anthony.
Yeah.
James Wiseman, snub. Tyrese Maxey, Rob. Where's Jalen Smith? Let's skip that one. Okay. Faku Campazzo, Rob. WTF. Peyton Pritchard, Rob. I would say a lot of those guys, solid.
Right.
Solid NBA potential there, and a lot of those guys, and Pritchard, Campazzo, the oldie, Maxey, Wiseman, of course, Wiseman, a lot of potential. Cole Anthony, potential to be a star in this league, you know, a borderline star, and then a lot of solid players like Achiuwa and Flynn came out of nowhere to be really solid. But I think the guy who flew under the radar the most and who's on that first team, and Trey called him the fourth best rookie, is Sadiq Bey. The guy was a baller this year for the Pistons and kind of upstaged Isaiah Stewart and Killian Hayes. The guy is really, really freaking good. Mm-hmm. He set a lot of marks as a three-point shooter for a rookie. That's a very good skill to have in 2021. He's going to have a long, long career in this league. He can be really, really good. No one really expected him to come out and shoot the ball really well. But, 10 games, at least 5 3-pointers, the most all-time by a rookie, set surpassing Steph and Iverson. So that's a great sign for the Pistons.
And there are reports, Lili, that the Mavericks were debating between Sadiq Bey there and Josh Green, who they ultimately selected at 18, or who maybe Vulgaris ultimately selected. The analytics said go with Josh instead of Sadiq Bey. I saw that coming out, I guess, that yesterday or today here. But anyway, anything to add to these all-rookie teams?
Well, I think Emmanuel quickly, I think he hit the record for like 94 of his first 100 free throws, so he should be in the first team just for that alone. Wow. But listen, if we're not going to get a Poku or a Faku, I mean, what do you do?
Okay, yeah. I mean, guys, if you're actually that upset about the all-rookie second team, you might have a problem. I thought we were sickos, but you really got to take a long, hard look in the mirror if you're that upset about this. But I do like when a guy like Cole Anthony uses it for inspiration. You got to find anything, right? And so to pin that tweet, sure. He'll come back with a vengeance next year. Prove him all wrong.
What about this? What about this, Skeets, from Chris Wynn?
No.
Need at least 5 all-rookie teams from Skeets for the sickos.
No, Jesus.
You could fill it out.
No. You basically did, Tass. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, no. I'm going to do that. No. I'm coming back Monday with a 5 all-rookie.
5 wow. deep. All right. Wow. 25 okay. rookies? I think that's a fair number. I think Onyeka Okongwu making a run here in the playoffs to get on team number 5.
Okay.
Devin Vassell, he played.
Yeah. There were a lot of, like, contributing rookies. You're not wrong. You could do it. This would be actually one season you could, because you couldn't do it a whole bunch of other seasons. You would be hard-pressed to get to your all-rookie fourth team and actually have, like, guys that legit played and contributed. But this year it did feel like a lot.
All-rookie first name team, Chuma Okeke.
Good name.
Chuma Okeke of the Magic. He was hurt. He would have been higher on this list. Aaron Nesmith. That's a good name. I like a Smith with a knee in front of it. I like it a lot.
Let's get to Tweet of the Night, and we'll set up tonight's games and rapid fire. But one final break to hear from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Whoa! Mac is back! You ever wish you could have it both ways? I do. Like a zero-calorie cheeseburger or staying up late but not feeling exhausted in the morning. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But you can have it both ways with Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I've got some polos, some tees, some undies, and I love them. Simple, soft, stylish. In fact, I'm wearing Mack Weldon right now. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. If you told me my silver PK polo was made from 100% cotton, I would 100% believe you. But those antimicrobial silver threads keep me feeling fresher longer. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code NODUNKS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code NODUNKS.
All right, back with No Dunks. Time for Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
Yeah, what do we got, Tass?
Well, Tweet of the Night is a fantastic reply to J.R. Jackson of CBS Sports' question out there. Throwing out the question. You need Giannis Antetokounmpo or Ben Simmons to hit a free throw to save your life. They both have been struggling. He asks, who are you choosing? And that's when Ben Gore replied with the best reply. Giannis, at least I'll have time to say goodbye to my friends and my family. Obviously poking fun that Giannis takes over 10 seconds. And it was incredible. In Game 6 in Milwaukee, a section of Brooklyn Nets fans were loud enough to hear at the free throw line counting. You know, on the road in Brooklyn, the whole arena's counting. One, two, three. He always goes over. Giannis always goes over. But to have it on the road happen and everyone being able to hear it, that's good stuff. That's good stuff.
It's amazing. Harden's reaction last night at the line on that one in particular, or the set there from Giannis. Because it's not just when he gets the ball and it's the 10 to 12 seconds with the dribble, dribble, dribble and the hesitation and all that. It's the pre-free throw routine, which is the backbreaker. I mean, he refuses the ball to like basically takes 10 seconds to shoot an imaginary basketball. It's like Trey Kirby playing hoops with no ball, rebounding with no basketball, like you're from above the rim. I mean, it's wild. Like, you add it together, and you're looking at a whole lot of time. I think the StatMuse broke it down. He took seven first-quarter free throws, and if you add up all the time that Giannis, like, steps to the line, doesn't get the ball, but steps to the line, does his little routine, then gets the ball and shoots it, it added up to, like, 3 minutes and 30 seconds. Because it takes like that long. There's just that much time that he's sort of killing there. It's amazing. That is a funny tweet. That's a funny reply that you at least get to say goodbye to your fam. You get to, like, yeah, you get to do a whole lot. You go on a little vacation with your fam before you ultimately perish.
Take a trip here.
If it's a Greek fam, you can have a lot of time to get in those double kisses. No problem. not just one kiss. But yeah, the Harden thing at the free throw line was great because Giannis went to the free throw line. The Nets fans are chanting in Milwaukee. They're counting. They're counting how long Giannis is taking at the line. They got to like 12 or 13. I think they got to 13. And James Harden goes, "Hey, come on, that's 13 seconds." So Harden is hearing the crowd, and he relays that to the ref. You can't count, man. The crowd is counting. Why can't you count the same way? I mean, they are counting maybe a little fast, but the refs also don't want to count a 10-second violation.
No.
That's not fun. But 3.5 minutes. What is this? Baseball?
Oh, my God.
I mean, let's go. Let's pick it up
Steve
here.
Steve Traxel of the free throw line. Lee, who are you choosing, though? Are you choosing Giannis or are you choosing Simo to take your life-saving free throw?
Man, I mean, I've got to go with Simo, don't I? I mean,
really?
I don't know.
I wouldn't.
I don't know.
No,
you're gonna be like, I'm not taking it. See ya.
I'm taking Giannis for sure.
Well, yeah, but the thing about Simo, and this is what I was talking about on the text message with some friends in Australia the other night, is like Giannis does this sort of thing where he leans back and like that's awful. Simo, it shouldn't be as bad as it is. It doesn't look as bad as Giannis. For me.
I don't care like how it looks, man. Put the fucking thing in. I want to survive. Yeah, I do not care how you put it in.
Giannis, I want to live. You know, look, Giannis he was like 15 or 16 when he started playing. And I think you can tell that someone's really tried to work with him and say, listen, just, you know, like this. This is the mechanical way of doing it.
Simmons is at the line. He's got to hit one to save your life. And like, he's up there and then he misses. And Lee, like, while you're vanishing, while you're dying, at least he had good form.
You're done. You know.
Oh, that's a great question. That's a tough one. That is a tough one. Man, they both should go underhand. We all know it. Just try it out.
Listen, I'm sure you guys have heard of Josh Giddey, who's a draft prospect coming in from Australia this season. I've got intel that he's been working with Andrew Gaze on his shooting. Okay. So that may be what Simo needs. Just go back to our grandfather of Australian basketball, Andrew, and you can learn to shoot from him. Maybe that's what we need.
I learned it from this Australian legend, and he learned it from this Australian legend.
It's all the way back to Gazy. All right. And Tass, you're being humble. I thought you actually had tweet of the night talking about Giannis at the free throw line. I got a good laugh out of it. Tass tweeting, Giannis late on every free throw, making us tardy Greeks proud with the flag emoji. And, you know, maybe funnier to us here at No Ducks, but
of course,
a great tweet.
Of course.
Great.
Inside intel.
Oh, I love it. I loved it. Okay. Where are we in this bad boy? Okay, tonight's game sixes. Here's the question I want for you guys, because my buddy Grish texted me, how many game sevens are we getting? Are we getting 3 game sevens? Lee, that's the cue. I said no, we're not. We already got one, of course, Saturday night. We got 2 game sixes tonight. Are they both going to find their way into a game seven, or will both of these series end tonight? What's your prediction?
Man, the Hawks, you've got to back the Hawks from here, don't you, at home? The Fortress will be rocking down there tonight. I think the Hawks close it out. And honestly, I think the Clippers do too. Man, that was a deflating loss for the Jazz. And I also think part of that is that Donovan Mitchell is clearly not 100% either. So the Clippers, this is the sort of chance for them to, I mean, slay some demons from the past. I mean, we've never seen this really before. So
They've never made the conference finals, the Clippers.
Wow, there you go. And they were up against the Rockets when Doc Rivers was coaching them, and they blew that lead. Mm-hmm. So, I say they both end tonight. I mean, why not? Okay. Hopefully we can get tickets. That's the bigger question.
Yeah,
will
so
we
what's
get
going
tickets
on here? How pricey are, I mean, are these available. SROs?
Yeah,
but $173 apiece for standing room only.
But that's before taxes and fees as well.
You're up to $200 easy.
Before taxes and fees,
you're up
my
to
man.
$200 easy.
Yeah, even I have somewhat of standards, you know, like... You know, but we'll see because
nice.
No, because they can drop
Stand.
If the resellers are like, okay, they're not moving and we only got an hour or two before game time, so I'm not out of it yet.
All right, so Lee thinks they both end tonight. Tassie, you got a prediction? Can I? What do you want me to text back to my buddy Grish? Is what I'm answering.
I think we get one more, but the reason I'm a little reluctant to pull a trigger on a Hawks ticket is I think the Sixers bounce back. I think they're too good. I think they're too good, and I want to see a Hawks win, but I do believe in Philly getting contributions from people outside of Joel Embiid. It might be dumb, Joel Embiid has been carrying this team so much, and he's gassed at the end of games, but I think Ben Simmons bounces back, and I think they win, but I do think the Clippers take care of business at home. Mm-hmm. I think they're feeling it, and yeah, I think it's demoralizing when your best player is banged up. Donovan Mitchell clearly not right. And obviously, even if Mike Conley comes back, yeah, we saw James Harden his first game. I wouldn't be too pumped to bet on those guys beating the Clippers, who are in such a good flow right now.
Yeah, my gut says the Clippers do end their series tonight, too, at home. I don't know with the Hawks, Sixers. Trey, you got a prediction? Even if you do or do not find your way down to the Fortress tonight with Steve Kirby in town, your dad?
Stevie K coming in town pretty soon here. The stream team is mentioning that the Hawks are wearing their MLK jerseys, and I don't think they've lost in them yet this season, so
what?
That's an advantage for the Hawks. Pretty crazy, right?
Yeah.
You know, once the Pope got a hold of them, those jerseys were blessed. Yeah. And it's come through every single time, man. I would love to be there, though, Lee, to just be able to yell, Tobias, where is he? Come on, buddy. Take a shot in the second half here. You're getting paid $200 million just to score baskets. You need to score some baskets. If I were you, Skeets, I would text Grish back and say, we're getting one more game seven, and then don't say anything else.
Just leave it at that.
Because then you could be right either way. I think that, well, one of these teams is going to extend the series. I don't know which one.
Sure.
I don't know. I would actually, I don't know. Are the Jazz going to be as bad as they were again? Are the Clippers going to show up in the clutch under pressure again? I don't know. I think we're getting one more game seven, but I'm too much of a softy to pick.
Sure. Yeah, no, I think you are right. I do think we'll get one more to go with that, the Bucks Nets game seven on Saturday night. But good luck figuring out these series at this point. Hopefully they're close games. That's all we care about on a Friday night. Okay, let's end this bad boy. It's a long drop podcast. That's okay. It's Friday with some rapid fire fun. I got the questions today, guys. You guys have the answers. It didn't take Devin Booker long to find a fan who went viral for yelling Suns in four after beating the snot out of a Nuggets fan in Denver. Booker tweeted Monday he was looking for the fan, and by Thursday, Booker had tracked him down and he was offering him a signed jersey and tickets to a conference finals game. Again, this guy beat up somebody in the stands. Now, by all accounts, it was self-defense, and people around him, you know, agree to that, even if they were Nuggets fans there. But it is still pretty wild. So the question is, you're all dads. When's a time you have maybe rewarded bad behavior? Tass, you go first.
Every goddamn day. Every single day, I've got one child yelping. Ah! Screaming while the other one is doing whatever she's doing. Today, the other one dropped some raisins while the other one was screaming, and the screamer picked up the raisins and just sucked them back. And so, you know, good for you. I'm not mad at that, but also you're just yelling in our ears. So I didn't necessarily reward her bad behavior, but I didn't rip those raisins out of her mouth. So you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I could have.
Yeah.
I could have been upset. But I guess that's what kids do. I'm not positive, but just an insatiable appetite for yelling and screaming. So every day, I mean, this is fresh on my brain, but yeah, it's kids, man.
Trey, what do you got for this?
I love that my kids are learning how to talk trash. Because you know that's a big part of competition is being able to talk trash. sit around the dinner table. We're making our picks for the basketball games of the night as we always do, and the girls just love to pick opposite of me so they can trash talk me. But when I explain what talking trash is, I'm like, you know, it's just kind of like teasing the other person, like saying your team won't win. So that's the only trash talk they know. They'll pick opposite of me every single time just so they can say, your team won't win. No. We got to learn a second trash talk, but that's a good starter, I think.
Okay. Lily, same question, of course.
Yeah, similar answer, actually, because we've got the basketball hoop outside and my 9-year-old plays with some of the kids out in the street. And I've heard him because in one of the books he reads, I think it's Big Nate, he plays basketball and he talks trash. And so when he's out there playing, he works on his trash talking. And I say to him, listen, trash talking is fine, but you've got to make sure you're playing first and winning. You can't just talk trash if you're losing. And anyway, and they play up to, like, they play 21, but sometimes it's up to 10, sometimes it's up to 8, sometimes up to 14. They just make up a number and they call it 21. It's kind of weird, but anyway. He came in the other day and he said, Dad, I won. And then I talked trash. And I was kind of like, what did you say? And he goes, just before I hit my last shot, I said, how many letters are in your alphabet, to his opponent? And the guy kind of got, he said, didn't know what to do. And he said, you've only got 25 because you ain't got no D. And then I hit the game winner. I
was like, oh, wow.
I give you some of that. My dad gave some of that. Yeah.
Hold on. Did you teach him that?
No, it's in his Big Nate. It's in his Big Nate book. So,
oh my God.
I was like, all right, my man. That's fine.
Bars.
That's amazing. All right.
There's a book about Nate Duncan. Actually, Lee.
Written by Danny LaRue.
He can talk some trash. He doesn't even have to talk trash. We were together when we were on that slippery slide, and people were taking a little too long in front of him, And he looked at his imaginary watch. He's just like, what are you guys doing here?
You're talking about Lee's son, not Nate Duncan, yeah.
Not Nate Duncan, yeah.
Danny, get out of the way!
Oh, man, that is awesome. I didn't know if that was going to be a good question to ask you guys. I thought that might be tough, but that worked out perfectly. All right, next one. Back to Giannis here and the slow free throws. It's been a story for much of the playoffs. It's sort of worn on viewers, fans, broadcasters even a little bit. Doris last night, I think, a little frustrated. Players, of course, notably Harden getting frustrated there at the line with how long it took Giannis to shoot those damn free throws. So the question is, it's a bit of a weird one, what's something you could do in the time it takes Giannis to shoot a free throw, Tass?
I can shave in under 10 seconds, wow. Under 12, 13 seconds. Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of surface area, but I can shave... My neck is what I shave in 12 seconds. Now, I get a head start because I just use shower water. So I get out of the shower. No, no shaving cream needed. Neck, done, 12 seconds. Moving on.
It would have been great if Harden was trimming his beard while Giannis is at the free throw line. Trey, same question.
Fans should do that. You know, like they used to have the stopwatch up there counting, and obviously they're counting, but like, they should pull stuff out and, like, trim their beards or something. Yeah. See what they can do. That'd be very funny. For me, you mentioned Skeets. It took Giannis 3 minutes and 30 seconds to shoot all of his first quarter free throws. I think I could go from completely empty skillet to scrambled eggs in 3 minutes and 30 seconds. Butter, heat it up, bubble it, pop your eggs in there, stir them up, high heat. We're going fast. Heavy curds for these eggs. 3 minutes and 30 seconds, I think you can get it done. All from right. Cold pan to hot eggs. Cold pan to hot eggs in less than 3 minutes and 30 seconds. I think it's possible. That's the next Fast and Furious 10.
It's going to be Vin Diesel cooking. You took it right out of my mouth. Lee, what do you got? What are you doing in the time it takes Giannis to shoot a free throw?
When I come back from doing the grocery shopping, like got a trunk full of all the sorts of bags, I never make more than one trip up the stairs. I hate it, so I just pile everything on. Mm-hmm. But despite all that weight, I'm like in that World's Strongest Man competition. You know, when they're carrying those things, I'm just like, kids, get out of the way. I'm coming up the stairs. I'm not stopping for anybody. So you got it, and it's tough. It gets those last ones at the top, and it would be close to 10 seconds, but I think I get there just before the buzzer sounds. So, That's my task. That's my challenge to do.
Final one here. The NBA draft lottery guy. It's on Tuesday, which means we'll soon know which team is in position to draft possibly Oklahoma State star Cade Cunningham with the number one overall pick. He seems to be the consensus. But why wait until Tuesday when we are going to do a happy hour during the NBA draft lottery? Yeah, we're bumping it up to do Tuesday. We usually do it on Thursday, but we're going to have some fun during the draft lottery Tuesday night. We'll have more info on Monday and early next week. But I just want you guys to tell me, we don't even need to watch it. Just call your shot. Who's going to win next week's NBA draft lottery, Tess?
Give me the Orlando Magic, guy.
Wow.
I believe. I believe in the Magic. Number one, because I love Cole Anthony, and we talked about him potentially being a star. I want a guy who can help Cole Anthony just shift to that number two role. I don't think Cole Anthony is going to be a lead guy on a championship team, but, you know, maybe he's got the potential to be a second guy. So, and they're not a free agency destination, so this would help. And smart points. They made a great trade getting rid of Vucevic for the Bulls draft pick, which has turned into the 8th best odds. They have their own draft pick, which is the 3rd best odds. Mm-hmm. They traded Vuce probably at the last possible moment that they could. His value would have gone down next year, I think. So, give me the Magic.
Okay.
I believe.
Yeah, you add it all together, those two picks, and I think they have almost a 20% chance at the number one pick when you take into consideration those two picks. So they've won it before. They could do it again. Tass says Magic. Who you got, Trey?
I just ran a single simulation on tankathon.com, and the Chicago Bulls got the number one overall pick with just a 4.5% chance. You think I'm joking, but it's completely factual. They got a 20% chance of ending up in the top four, which would be huge because then they keep that pick that they traded to the Magic. So give me the Bulls and Raptors finishing in the top four.
Okay.
Both of them.
Okay.
Both of them.
Lee, who's winning the draft lottery on Tuesday night when we're doing a happy hour?
I'm hoping it's the Charlotte Hornets. I would love them to get another star to go alongside LaMelo Ball. That would be awesome. So I'm pulling for them. But Trey, I did a simulation. Guess where your Bulls finished?
Number one.
No, number eight. Don't they usually finish at 70?
7 or 8, that's where they usually fall. I just did one as well, just for shits and giggles, and OKC is winning the draft lottery on Tuesday night, according to my simulation. They have a pretty good chance at maybe getting it, 11.5% odds at the number one pick. Number two, Tass, you'll love it, the Toronto Raptors.
I just got a Raptors number one. Oh, I got Raptors number ones on back-to-back simulations.
Man, so did I. I got a Raptors number one, too.
Wow. Are the Raptors going to win the draft lottery on Tuesday? Hey, look. It'd be pretty cool if the Raps or the Bulls, I guess, win it there if we're doing a happy hour while we're watching.
Wow, I just got another Raptors. I think it's going to be the Raptors.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe I should stop refreshing this, wasting all the good luck on the simulations. Oh, a Bulls number one. I'm Simbular over here. I'm crushing it.
Well, maybe the Raptors, it's a bit of a, I don't know, a gift for having to play in Tampa all year. Here you go. Thanks for doing that. I know you really didn't want to go down there, but here you go. We'll see.
Oh, I got a Cavs. I'm a Tanvir Bular.
Oh, my goodness.
I think that was his name.
That's the time to wrap it up. That's Rapid Fire. That's the Drop Podcast. Man, action-packed episode there with the Kemba Horford trade and talking about Game 6 and looking ahead to these Game 7s and Lee's awesome breakdown ranking the most desirable NBA head coaching vacancies. A lot of fun. Leave your comments on today's show in the YouTube comments below. If you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star rating and review. Get yourself an Athletic subscription. Go to The Athletic. I can't talk anymore, guys. It's been a long week. I was on a long stream yesterday for Top Shot. My God. Go to theathletic.com/nodunks to get your subscription if you don't have one already. And keep emailing in your questions and comments to nodunks@theathletic.com. Okay, I'm done. Guys, maybe see you down at the Fortress. Maybe see you in a pool. Maybe see you for a Game 7 watch party. If not, we'll all catch up together on Monday. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, I was tardy for the stream today, Skeets. So I wanted to ask you about that Top Shot. Give us a quick little summary. What happened on the Top Shot? There was some suspense, right? What you're gonna pack? You're gonna pick a Mom or no?
No.
I don't know. The Moms get all blended together.
You know? Honestly, the stream was great because it was exactly like this, but me talking to Jacob from Top Shot just about what's going on in basketball. Talked a lot about the coaches, potential trades. He had a good one as we wrap it up here. He's a Knicks fan, and he threw out the idea of trading RJ Barrett for Brandon Ingram. Whoa.
I saw that. That's the suspense I was talking about.
I was like, oh, Zion going to the Knicks, you know, hardy, hard, hard. He's like, no, what about trading RJ Barrett? He wants to play with Zion and get him for Ingram. I was like, whoa. So it was a lot of fun. I think it's up on the Top Shot Twitch stream if you want to go watch it again. But yeah, honestly, Tass, I just did this. This is all I do all week. Jump on streams and talk hoops. And I love it. I'm blessed. Guys, embrace the weekend.